is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's the final week of the NFL preseason, and we're kicking it off with a doubleheader tonight. It's also week zero of college football, so meaningful football is on our television screens this week. Finally, we'll discuss all that and more throughout the course of today's show. Welcome in to this Thursday edition of the Lombardi Line presented by BetMGM. In for Michael Lombardi, our guy Jonathan Von Tobel. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. Always a pleasure, JVT, although this morning I feel like the Angels fan in you probably not particularly thrilled to be on the air first thing.
So here's the thing. I'm actually kind of down for a different reason. I stopped by the coffee shop today. I was very, very hungry. And I got a parfait from the wonderful Jackpots.
Okay.
I dropped it in the car. No. So I dropped
it. Did they see you drop it?
Well, I mean, I let them know. I didn't just drop it and run off. No, as a former casino worker, I understand these things work. So I made sure to tell the powers that be that I dropped a parfait all over the carpet. But yeah, I feel worse about that. I also feel very bad for Shohei Ohtani.
I more so meant from the standpoint of if they saw you drop it, they would give you another one.
Oh, no. The $10 parfait was just a waste.
Just done for.
As Mike Palm always says when people ask him for free stuff, we're running the business here. So I did not get another. So $10 down the drain.
At least your UCL is okay, though.
That's very true. Unlike Shohei Ohtani, for the second time, UCL injury. Now, it's unclear, according to reports, whether or not he's going to have surgery. But it sucks, man. Angels aside, baseball season aside, whatever it is, Shohei Ohtani is the best baseball player that we've ever seen. And the fact that he was set to get an enormous payday because he deserved it after doing what he did with the Angels, whoever was going to be with, and then tears his UCL for the second time and now has a myriad of questions for him as a pitcher going forward. I mean, this could be a nine-figure type of injury for Shohei Ohtani. Now you're looking at a deal that might be very lucrative, but very incentive laden when you're talking about being a pitcher, as opposed to just paying him as being, you know, a very good pitcher on top of being one of the best DHs in Major League Baseball. I think it absolutely sucks. You know, aside, you know, my Angels fandom or whatever, as a human who enjoys the sport of baseball and who enjoys Shohei Ohtani and thinks that he deserves to get every single bit of money that is going to come to him, absolutely blows that this happens to him at this time, right before he's about to hit the open market.
The most highly anticipated free agent that I can think of, what he was about to go through.
And I don't think there's a question.
To your point about this being the second surgery, he is going to seek a second opinion.
Yep.
So we're not sure what he's going to need ultimately yet, but unfortunately had to have Tommy John back in 2018. Did still hit his 44th home run, though, despite it all.
Oh, I mean, look, as a hitter, he's going to be, I wouldn't want to say fine, but, you know, the year that he originally injured his UCL and then, you know, had, I think it was surgery in October, he missed the first month of the regular season and then DH'd the rest of the way. It was perfectly fine. So as a hitter, he's going to be okay. And he has improved as a hitter almost every single year. And so that's not the part you're really worried about. It's just overall to have this, to do this, so much of the contract was going to be hitter and pitcher, right? Top end of the rotation guy. So when
Nobody
you sign
can do
him,
what he does.
Correct. So when you sign him, that's going to be the case. But it also, like, to kind of expand the cone of vision here and look at everything, you know, we had kind of seen a little something coming, you know, in and out, short starts, all of this sort of thing in terms of injuries for Ohtani. And the Angels have a history now. You know, I mentioned it with you since there was a stretch from 2014 to 2018. And on the back end, it included Shohei Ohtani. This Angels team had nine pitchers experience UCL injuries. This is now the 10th over that stretch. And actually, it's the 10th because I can't remember over that time. I haven't been tracking it. But lo and behold, they are up there with the Tampa Bay Rays for pitchers who have undergone UCL surgeries, injuries, whatever it is. As an organization, you have to start asking yourself questions. Mike Trout comes off the injured list, goes back onto it. He has missed a ton of time. You have had a rash of pitchers experience UCL injuries in your time over the last 9-10 years. This is now something where you have to reflect as an organization and realize, like, whatever we're doing, something has to not be right for this. You can't just get that unlucky over this long span of time and just be like, it's just how it goes. There's got to be something happening here. And it also speaks to the larger picture for the Angels. Stormy, I can count over and over again the amount of pitchers who are with the Anaheim Angels, who leave the organization and go on to have really solid careers. Andrew Heaney, Michael Lorenzen, a recent name, right? Like, this has been a constant for the Angels. So this is an organization that, since the season has gone up in flames, since the trade deadline, doing everything they could to keep Ohtani. You've got to do a lot of self-reflection here from top to bottom, because this has been an absolute nightmare with two of the best players, and now, of course, coupled on with a rash of injuries for your pitchers over the last 19
years. Yeah, time for some serious evaluation, it seems like, for the Angels. And you referenced that trade deadline, 5-16 for the Angels since, saying that they are going to go all in and elected to keep Shohei Ohtani. They're currently 10 games out of a wild card spot with 35 games to go this season. Very unfortunate the way that things have played out, considering what they wanted to transpire in the back end of this season. But now from one UCL injury to another, we've known for a while that to start the 2023 season, if healthy, Brock Purdy would be the starting quarterback for the San Francisco 49ers. There was, however, a competition for QB2, and we found out yesterday that it will be former third overall pick Sam Darnold, which is not Trey Lance, to the chagrin of all of the major Trey Lance for MVP supporters. That still odd to me that when you looked at the odds board this preseason that he was the same number.
Well, that's you're right, because he was like, what, 60-1? It just speaks to the market itself. Like, there's no reason to bet into the MVP market. It's insane, numbers you're getting.
But when you saw the news yesterday, I don't know about you, but I wasn't particularly surprised, especially knowing that the 49ers brought Sam Darnold in this offseason for a reason. Fairly quickly, how well his skill set kind of is tailored to what the 49ers want to do on offense and being a facilitator. And Trey Lance having as limited experience as he has and him being on this roster behind the scenes for a long time, just not really panning out the way that they thought. Somebody that they traded up 3 first round picks for to be number 3 overall a few years ago.
Yeah. And I will say this. I don't think for anybody out there, because we love to do this, a pile on guys, I don't think by any stretch we're talking about like punting on Lance as a quarterback. There was a great stat that was floated out there yesterday on Twitter. If you look at pass attempts, you know, because Trey Lance, and I apologize for whoever had this, because I'm not going to give you credit because I don't remember, but Dorian Thompson-Robinson and Trey Lance were part of the same recruiting class. If you include college and these snaps in the preseason, Dorian Thompson-Robinson has doubled pass attempts into, like, from what Trey Lance has done. Like, he hasn't played that much football since coming out of high school. So there's still probably something here. But if you're the San Francisco 49ers, if you're right in thinking that you have something in Brock Purdy and you have a decent backup in Sam Darnold, it makes sense now to shop around and see what you can get. And you're going to sell him for pennies on the dollar, given what you give up for him. But to at least recoup something here, I think is the way to go. So I don't think I would punt if by any means, you know, if I'm a team that has, you know, a veteran at the top of my depth chart who has some time to develop this guy, I would definitely try to flip something very cheap for him. So I don't think we've seen the last of Trey Lance, but I think it makes the most sense at this point where we're at.
As a 49ers fan, I think I've always just been a little bit frustrated with the move in general. Like, he wasn't the guy I wanted that season, right? And you get an FCS player who had one, granted, exceptional season, but very limited experience, not at the FBS level against top-tier competition. And then you have a lot of pressure on this guy that it's been very, very difficult for him to have that opportunity to live up to. And even last year, when he's given the reins to be the starting quarterback, gets a monsoon game and then breaks his ankle. Yeah. Yep. So it was always an uphill battle for him. And then you look at the reps and the lack of experience, to your point, 519 passes his entire football life, which includes high school, which is absurd to think about. Patrick Mahomes in one season at Texas Tech had more than he's had in his entire football career. So the opportunity just hasn't really been there for him to get the reps that he needs. And I believe we have a soundbite, Elliot, producer Elliot, tell me if we do. But Kyle Shanahan kind of talking about the expectations or what the plan might be moving forward with Trey Lance.
I mean, this isn't a thing that we're giving up on Trey. This is more of how Brock played in his 7 games, and that was decided before the season started. And then how good Sam's looked. They both looked good. But we do have to make a decision here, and you only get so many reps at it. And we feel, you know, starting about 10 days ago, Sam really separated himself, and we got to keep it real in that way.
So Sam earns the job. Trey Lance, QB3, where things sit right now, you say, see if you can try to turn him for something. I wonder where that would be. And to Kyle Shanahan's point, because he's referenced it on another program as well, saying, hey, they needed 4 quarterbacks last year. Maybe we just need a little depth at the position. We do keep him. They're exploring their options. They had conversations with the Vikings around the Super Bowl last year. Nothing ended up panning out. Yeah. Any other places that maybe stand out to you as where he might work?
I think Minnesota and Tampa Bay are the two that make the most sense. You know, you have 2 quarterback depth charts. For Minnesota, it's a little bit different, but you have an aging quarterback who you don't have a plan to succeed afterwards. And then for Tampa Bay, you've got nothing. And apparently, you've got nothing because the second round pick that you have in Kyle Trask didn't win the job over there in Tampa Bay. So it would maybe make some sense to take a flyer on Trey Lance and see what's going to happen. The interesting part about Tampa Bay, though, is I would say it's probably a lame duck coach in that I think Todd Bowles, if everything happens as we expect, right, win total, all of that sort of stuff, Bowles will probably be on his way out at the end of the year. So do you take on a project and developmental piece in Trey Lance knowing that you're going to have a new staff coming in the next season? So I think that makes it a little bit murky, but I think those are probably the top two teams of the list right now.
Yeah, I would agree. Another team I saw floated yesterday was the Atlanta Falcons, and I'm curious your thoughts on that, playing behind Desmond Ridder, who, like, I mean, hasn't really shown us a ton yet. It's not like he was a very highly touted prospect out of college.
No, but it's also like clearly they're trying to see if they have something. You know what I mean? It doesn't make much sense if that's going to be the way that you're going to go. You're already trying to develop the young piece that you have. What was the Desmond Ridder? Second, third round pick? I can't remember. But he was up there, right?
Yeah.
So you clearly think that you maybe have something here and you're handing him the reins. It wouldn't make much sense to then shed assets, whatever it is, to go get another young quarterback that you might have to develop.
I just didn't think it wouldn't be a ton of assets, you would imagine, for, unfortunately, considering what the 49ers gave up for him. I don't think that they are anticipating getting a ton back for a guy that we've just talked and laid out a ton about the lack of experience.
I mean, look at Isaiah Simmons, right? He just got flipped for a seventh round pick, so you're probably not getting much.
Ay, ay, ay. Okay, so we're going to have to take a step aside here, first time out of the day, but when we return, we will discuss the two preseason games that we have coming up in the NFL today. Two favorites getting a little bit of steam, a little bit of love in the Steelers and the Indianapolis Colts today, so we will discuss your squad again
on the other side.
But from baseball to the NFL. We'll be right back on the Lombardi Line. You're listening to VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and more. You can download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with a state-issued ID, open up an account, and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-522-4700. JVT in for Michael today. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. In about 15 minutes, we'll get into some college football week zero upon us beginning this Saturday. Michael Calabrese is college football betting analyst over at the Action Network. He's going to stop by and help us with that discussion. Hour two, we'll also have Mike Somich in his usual spot. Professional handicapper, does great work with us here at VSiN. That's at 1:15 Eastern later on this hour as well. Have you know, get into some FIBA World Cup stuff, because we have that action beginning tomorrow, right?
Tomorrow morning, 1 a.m.
Tomorrow morning. And you'll be up and ready for that, obviously.
Well, I have to be on Follow the Money tomorrow, so yes, I will be up. But I plan on getting up anyway. Don't sleep on Sunday. Big one. Italy and the Dominican Republic. Big one for Group A.
All right, we're going to save that for a little bit later, though. For now, let's get into the preseason doubleheader tonight in the NFL. Both favorites taking some money, like I referenced before the break. The action beginning at 4:30 Pacific, 7:30 Eastern on NFL Network, with the Steelers, who have been steamed up to a 4.5-point favorite now against the Atlanta Falcons, total 38.5. And based on what I've seen from Pittsburgh this season, depth at the quarterback position, Mike Tomlin's general approach to the preseason, I think that this is pretty fair that this number's moved from 2.5 to 4.5. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it makes sense. I've been on this kind of kick with the preseason where it's easy to get closing line value, and easy, I shouldn't probably use a term, but you can get closing line value. It's readily available if you're ahead of the information. You just got to be paying attention. And a lot of people out there, you can lay 2.5 because you get the info that so-and-so isn't playing, whatever it is. The problem is, as I've been saying, Stormy, is just because you have the information, we also don't know what it means. So, like, in something like this, where if you're getting the indication that, hey, look, for the Atlanta Falcons, there's going to be no Desmond Ridder, and the Steelers are, I don't know, going to take it seriously or play guys. Okay, but how long are they going to play? What are they going to run? What's the purpose? And I think that's where I have some trepidation that at this point right now, it makes sense given the information out there, but you as a bettor in these instances, if you're not ahead of these, you're almost more beneficial to you to come in against the line move only because, like, you're missing out on the best of it when it's opens 2.5. Now you're up to 4.5. And who knows? The market likes that kind of stuff so much. We've seen the steam really go hard in a lot of directions. Maybe this gets up to 5. But I think that's kind of where I'm at with a lot of these, and especially in a preseason week 3 setting. I mean, anything can happen. Who cares? We're all done here at this point, right? I mean, with the Colts, I know we're going to talk about them. Okay, we're going to play the starters. Let's get in and let's get out. I don't want this. I don't want anybody to get hurt. So I've kind of been rolling with the mindset. And we have lots of examples. I should note that too. Not only just side or total. You know, you go back to last week, the total and the game between the Chargers and the Saints. That got bet down because of rain. And then, of course, it goes over the total. We have Browns and Eagles. Eagles got bet up. That actually ended up as a tie. Eagles don't cover. Yeah, the Raiders and the San Francisco 49ers. Your team got bet up to a 5-point favorite before close. They end up losing outright. So there's a lot of examples of actually you might just maybe want to go against the line move at times if you were behind the eight ball and you haven't gotten it.
Yeah, I know some people do a really good job with preseason and are profitable at it. It's just not my favorite thing. I don't love sifting through press conferences for information all day. But like there are certain instances like this with the Steelers where if you did get the 2.5, you're feeling pretty comfortable. I still would prefer the Steelers at this point because even if Kenny Pickett doesn't start, and I mean, there's a chance he could get a series, and each of the previous 3 series that he's played, he's ended up leading touchdown drives. So, but even if not, like you have Mitch Trubisky, you have, what's his face? Mason Rudolph. Mm-hmm. And like, you have 2 guys that have been starters in the NFL, which I think gives you a little bit of added confidence there. I like Tanner Morgan too. The depth at quarterback for me is enough for me to say offensively, okay, I think that the Steelers are going to produce in this spot.
I think you hit on something pretty interesting. I wanted to look it up to make sure. I always like these line moves. I find them fascinating because I'm reading an article from a Steelers blog, right, about, hey, what are we going to look for today? Assuming Kenny Pickett sees the field, like, we don't even know.
No, we don't.
You know what I mean? It's the same thing going back to that Browns-Eagles game. I read a lot of, you know, oh, Jalen Hurts has to play. And so that thing got bet up 2.5-3 points. And I'm like, well, we don't know. And then sure enough, we see the results. So I'll be very interested to see who ends up playing here for Pittsburgh, and even if they do, what kind of action they're going to get. But I can understand the thought process, especially when you have, you know, the Falcons' depth chart of turnover-prone machine in Taylor Heinicke and the rest of what it looks like for him.
We did see starters on both sides of the ball for the Falcons last week, but Arthur Smith, similarly to Tomlin, while Tomlin has said, hey, if guys are healthy, you know, we're going to play them a little bit like we have the last 2 weeks, yet to declare starters. I'm not convinced that any of them will go for the Falcons. That's why I have more belief in the Steelers in this spot, but no bet for me at this number because it's just not fun betting the worst of a number if you're not like extremely confident in it. So that's just my lean, I guess, in this game. You referenced the Colts, so we had a line move in that game as well. 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 Eastern kickoff. That game on Amazon Prime. The Colts up from 2.5-3 to 4.5. I did see a 5 out there at one point as well against the Eagles, total 38. Shane Steichen says, your guy, Anthony Richardson, will start after not seeing any action game 2 against the Bears. How long will he play? I'm unsure. I think it would be nice to see a quarter, though.
I mean, he played a quarter against Buffalo, right? I think, he played a full quarter against Buffalo. So,
were you surprised to see him not play at all against the Bears?
Not really. It's the preseason, and you don't know because they have those joint practices. You don't know what they work on in joint practices and what they feel like they saw in joint practice to feel like, okay, we don't need to put him out there. So I'm not entirely surprised. And again, here, like, okay, he's going to start. We know that the offensive line is probably going to be the starting unit because, again, it's your starting quarterback. You don't want him to get hurt. The question is just how long. Is it actually another quarter like we saw against Buffalo? Or is it, hey, let's go get 1-2 drives, get a little misty, see what we could do, and then get out of there and go to the regular season? So I always, like, you look at this, 3 at the open, up to 5 in multiple spots. Like, this is going to get to 5 closing consensus and maybe even higher if we get official news. Do we have official news on what the Eagles are going to do yet?
No, but they don't really care about preseason. Right. Sirianni, Eagles under Sirianni, 1-5-2 straight up in these games. Like, it's just not something that's important to them, it seems like.
I just think that, but still, you know, depth chart's not terrible. And I just, like, 5 in a preseason setting where we're talking about week 3, season's all over with, it is a lot to go out there and lay 5 with the team behind the information. So, again, this is one of those instances where I'll sound like a broken record, but I think I'd rather be on Philly on this end because, again, you're behind the line move. I'd rather be catching 5 in a setting in which we have no idea how the Eagles are going to handle things going forward and how long Anthony Richardson is going to play.
Correct. But that's why these games, to me, are just, unless you have firm information and, like, a lot of confidence and conviction in something. Mm-hmm. It's just not my favorite thing to bet. I like betting things where I'm like, okay, I know, I feel very firm that this is how this is going to play out, that this team is good at this. In preseason, there's so much testing out and information, unless you're being told what it is from a coach and exactly how many series you're going to see from a player. It's just not as interesting to me.
Right. No, I agree. I think that when we talk about the money-making opportunities, when you get closing line value, more often than not, you're going to be on the positive side. Having said that, you know, I liken this a little bit to like basketball. You know, in NBA, if a line moves to, you know, if you're behind a line move like 1.5, 2 points, you know, do you want the best of the number? Sure. But is it the worst thing in the world in a high variance sport like basketball to be, you know, off by 1.5, 2 points? It's not the worst thing in the world. So in something like this, where there is variance in terms of information and what it means, it might not be the worst thing in the world, but there's just so much chaos once you get past what you know, which could be one freaking drive, that I would just want really no part of it unless you have a firm idea, like you said. If Shane Steichen came out and said, Anthony Richardson is going to play, the starting offensive line is going to play, they're going to be in there for the entire first quarter, then sure, get in on that. But even then, too, think about that premise. Cool. First quarter. We have three other quarters left to play. What does that look like? You just don't know.
Yeah, but I think there's also probably at least a little bit of more confidence, and I think this is probably another reason why the line is so much in the Colts' favor. It's, again, quarterback depth, and that's a big part of the preseason in general, where you have Gardner Minshew and Sam Ellinger. Not exactly like my favorite quarterbacks in the world, but again, like guys with experience. Gardner Minshew, obviously a veteran in this league. Little things like that, but like we've talked about the entire time, not my favorite thing. The preseason to me at this point, with the way that it's transitioned from four games to three, is fascinating to me to see how different coaches handle it and have different philosophies when it comes to who they're going to play when. Like, nothing is across the board the way that it kind of used to be, where you knew on this game you're going to see starters for X amount of time.
You want a hot take?
Love them.
Gardner Minshew is low-key stunk in the preseason.
Oh, you got numbers?
Well, I mean, because, like, so if you look at so everybody was all rotting up over the Chicago Bears game. Hey, man, 13 of 15 and 107 yards and a touchdown. His average depth of target was 4 yards downfield. It was dinking and dunking and just doing a whole bunch of nothing. And it wasn't really great. And he still committed to turnover worthy play. To quarterback depth, that might be part of it. But Minshew is low-key stunk in the time we've seen.
I also don't want you to take my comments as me saying, like, I believe in Gardner Minshew, four and a half points.
No, but
that's
think,
not what I mean.
But I think that's part of what the market thinks. I think that's part of what you look at when it comes to the Indianapolis Colts. And you know, we heard a lot of that. I was talking about this last weekend with Holden Kushner, but he filled in with me. And I kind of pushed back. I was like, I actually don't think he was that good against Chicago if you really break down what he did. And if the market is thinking that, I think they might be in for a rude awakening if part of the reasoning is, hey, Gardner Minshew is going to carry me to the promised land here tonight.
No question. All right, so good NFL preseason conversation. We are going to turn our attention to actual, real college football games that are coming up this weekend. Week zero kicking off on Saturday with Notre Dame and Navy over in Ireland. We will discuss that game and more with the Action Network's Michael Calabrese coming up next on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
For the break, we wrapped up some of our thoughts on the two preseason games coming up tonight in the NFL. But throughout this entire NFL preseason, all of our VSiN experts have been busy evaluating every single team to try to give you the best betting edge. Our updated NFL betting guide is due out at the end of the month. It's going to help you get ahead of everything you need for the upcoming season. Picks from every on-air host. We've got team-specific preseason analysis, how to use VSiN betting splits, and football contest strategies as well. You can become a VSiN Pro subscriber today for as low as $19 and reserve your copy of the guide or take advantage of our football season special and get access to everything we do here at VSiN from now through the Super Bowl for $199. It is all-encompassing. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line alongside Jonathan Von Tobel, Stormy Bonantoni here. Time to get into some college football week zero talk. 7 games on tap as we kick off the 2023 season. To help us break it all down, we bring in Michael Calabrese, college football betting analyst over at the Action Network. How we doing? We got football this weekend. How pumped are you?
I am pumped. The way I describe this is, if you've ever been stuck on the tarmac, you know, your flight gets delayed, or you're in a New York City subway and, you know, you stop moving. Pretty quickly, camaraderie is built with, you know, the strangers who were once strangers all around you. Like, we're in this together. That's how I feel about week zero. I've watched so much UMass tape and Jacksonville State media days. It's like, these teams are strange, but they're my teams right now, and I can't wait to actually see them play on Saturday.
All right, let's start with Jacksonville State, because I got a big one here. Not only have I bet UTEP in this game, Dustin Sweetelson and myself have a dinner bet. Loser has to take the other Andiamos, the steakhouse over there at the D. He's got Jacksonville State. I've got UTEP. Who wins? Who's eating dinner for free?
This could be a rough one for you. This is Jacksonville State's very first game bumping up from the FCS level. It is going to be a zoo at their home game here. And I like what Rich Rod brings to the table in this game, because he is a seventh year starting quarterback who's able to run this offense. And I think they're going to come in hot. They were a top 10 rushing team, a top 10 scoring team at the FCS level. And UTEP lost a lot in their front seven. This has been a team that's hung its hat on defense. Praise Amalaway at defensive end is still going to be a borderline player of the year candidate on the edge. But everybody else in the front seven, it's basically new faces and moving pieces around. So I think there's a chance that Jacksonville State catches them napping here in the opener. And it's going to require a really good game out of Gavin Hardison, the quarterback for the Miners.
Might be a tough go for you, JVT. And Andiamo was great. Had my rehearsal dinner there a couple weeks ago. That was
Did you get married?
Money. Yeah, rumor has it.
You hadn't mentioned it. No.
But also, I'm just curious, before we move off of this game, thoughts on the total, because odds makers clearly think this is going to be a shootout type of a game, 54.5. We know UTEP has a lot of returning starters on offense, a group that had, I think, 30 plus points in five of their last seven games of last season. Rich Rod offenses you don't usually want to bet against in that spot. What do you think of that number?
I think if I were to go on this total, I would go over. You also have to factor in that it's going to be incredibly hot. So I think these defenses are going to wilt, an up-tempo attack from Rich Rod. I think there's going to be an opportunity to catch teams that are really tired at the end of drives, five and six plays in. The heat index could be over 100 down there in Alabama.
All right, let's go to a couple of the other big ones. How about this one? Market has been moving in favor of Louisiana Tech. We're up to 11.5 in a few spots. Total's down to 58.5. What do we expect from the Bulldogs? Think they're coming in and romping all over FIU?
FIU was a little bit sneaky competitive last year. I'm not enamored with the either side in this game, but I do think over is the way to play this. La Tech was just missing kind of that competent quarterback play. They go through the portal. They get Hank Bonkmeyer to come in from Boise State. And when it comes to him, his issue has always been staying healthy. At least going into game one, he's 100%. Smoke Harris is a name to keep an eye on, because not only is he going to be able to help them out of the slot and pop some big plays, he's one of the best return men in the entire country, and nothing helps an over like a special teams touchdown.
I'm so annoyed at JVT for putting you through those as the first two games to discuss.
These are great. Wait, hold on. No. We're not going to talk about how excited we are for week zero and then criticize. These are two legitimate week zero games that are very, very good. And we've seen quite a bit of action on both of them. UTEP, Jacksonville State's been flipping back and forth between one.
I'm just saying, we're 5 minutes into this segment and you haven't even mentioned the marquee matchup of the weekend that's actually kicking things off in Ireland.
Which three or more touchdown favorite would you like to discuss? Navy, Notre Dame, or USC?
We've got some interesting situations. Here. Let's at least talk about programs that the masses are interested in. Okay, I'm just gonna call a spade here, but yes, Notre Dame is
masses are interested in money
and a 0.5-point favorite against Navy. But just bear with me here for a second, because I think there's money to be made in this game as well. But first game for Navy without former head coach Ken Niumatalolo, very different philosophy, it seems like. Well, yes, they're still going to run a triple option, maybe get a little more of the passing game going in there. Unsure who their quarterback will be, likely Ty Lavatai, from what I understand, but maybe we'll also see Horvath a little bit in this spot. And Sam Hartman getting worked in with his first start as the quarterback for the Fighting Irish. 20.5-point spread, total 49. What are your thoughts?
I like under here, and the new clock rules come into play right away in this game. This is the first game of the college football season. For those uninitiated to it, the stoppage after the first down is going away other than the last 2 minutes of each half. That's going to be really impactful in a game where both sides are going to look to run the ball. Grant Chestnut comes up from Kennesaw State to lead the Navy offense. What he's going to do is he's going to add a tight end into the triple option set and a lot of passes near the line of scrimmage. So in the flat, flares, screens, crossing routes. I think that's going to give them just a little bit of extra punch in this game offensively. And when you look at what Notre Dame has, Parker comes in as the OC. He was a failed OC at West Virginia. And in his last year, he really focused on Letty Brown as his bell cow. He has Estime in his backfield. I know all the headlines are for Sam Hartman, But I do think, given how green his receiving core is, they're going to lean on the run game. Going into a Navy run defense that actually was top five in the nation last year, they bring back 9 starters. So that's kind of a strength-on-strength battle there. I think there's going to be long drives in this game, the clock running. And when you look at, you know, holistically, how much of an impact the, you know, 5 to 10 seconds per first down is going to have, there's, you know, between 35, 40 first downs in the game. So you could see between 3 and 5 minutes bled off of a game right away. So when I see 2 running teams and any number north of 7 touchdowns, I want to go ahead and go under. So I'm going to go under here on the Emerald Isle.
All right, got to make sure we get in the marquee matchup, USC and San Jose State. 29.5 at the open. The totals really moved, 63 up to 66. Now we're up to 32 in some spots in favor of the Trojans.
Yeah, books are just taking on all the action on USC. Everyone's laying the points. This is kind of a square play where, you know, USC could win by 60 points. That's the view. San Jose State has a good offense. So what, from my perspective, this is a live play. I want to see the USC defense in a live game situation actually tackle somebody. Because the last 2 memories I have is against Tulane and Utah, and they couldn't bring anybody down in the open field. I know Barry Alexander, defensive tackle, is going to be impactful with their run defense. But Chevin Cordero is a guy who can score points. And if they score 21, 24 points in this game, it's just a question of USC's focus for 4 quarters. Do they play Caleb Williams the whole way? Do they try to get into their bench? And the other element for Lincoln Riley is there's so many mouths to feed on this offense that sometimes it's a question of, do we get into rhythm? Do we have, you know, a guy who gets to 8 or 9 targets, or does he really try to spread around and keep everybody happy coming out of fall camp? So I don't see a lot of value on the point spread here, but I'm going to go on the live number. And if the USC defense looks as they did at the end of last year, I think the Spartans are a live dog.
I like that perspective. And Cordero, 23 touchdowns, 6 interceptions a year ago. He's the offensive preseason player of the year in the Mountain West Conference. I could see this being one of those games where, to your point, Caleb Williams gets pulled in the end of the third quarter because they have such a significant lead. He runs a couple touchdown scoring drives and backdoor cover situation or live number, to your point. I'm a little bit disappointed looking here at one of the plays that you have. You're taking Ohio money line against my alma mater, San Diego State. What do you like about the Bobcats in this spot?
I like nothing more than to say hail Montezuma. But in this spot, you look at how much the Aztecs have lost in their front 7. A 3-time All-Mountain West linebacker, the Tavai brothers up front, against an Ohio offensive line, they returned 75% of their starts. The Maple Missile, Curtis Rourke at quarterback. He's, you know, a read option savant. And then Cy Bagura, who was the MAC Offensive Player of the Year as a freshman. This is not lining up really well for San Diego State. And when you look at what they did last year in their opener in Snapdragon Stadium, everybody figured that they would just shut down Arizona, and that was a bad start for them. This is really going to come down to Moose Maiden, their quarterback. He needs to take a big jump forward this year, and he's a risk taker in terms of, you know, the football. I don't know. I think Ohio is going to make him pay in this one, and I think the MAC is going to get a marquee win in the non-conference.
Boo. But it's all right. You know, got to respect your opinion. It's fair. I just root for them to win. Okay. I'm not necessarily saying I'm going to lay the 2.5 with San Diego State, but I'm hoping for them. Before we let you go, got about 60 seconds. I know you also have a play in New Mexico State, UMass. What you got?
Diego Pavia is my guy. He's a land of enchantment legend. He grew up in Albuquerque. He was a high school football player and wrestler, got a full offer, full ride to Nebraska for wrestling, turns that down. Goes to the New Mexico Military Institute, wins a JUCO National Championship, comes in last year, turns the offense around once he was named starter by Jerry Kill, and he was killing it at the end of last year. 13 total touchdowns in his last 3 games. This offense is ready to pop, and they're facing UMass, who, for anyone who watches college football, this is the bottom of the barrel, 133rd out of 133 teams in the power rankings. I think this is going to get ugly. I have no problem laying the 6.5. I'll probably go on the alternate minus 10.
Yeah, they're like a 39.5 point underdog to Auburn the following week. And Auburn's like a 6.5 win total type team, if that gives you any perspective into UMass. Thank you so much, Michael. Really appreciate your time.
Thanks so much, guys. Enjoy week 0.
Michael Calabrese, college football analyst over at the Action Network. Follow him at eSpreeze on X, pronounced Z, according to our guy JVT. Lots of letters there.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Attention, BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Well, here's a chance for both of you to earn a $100 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account, click on the Refer a Friend program. That'll send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up, they make a deposit, they'll get their $100 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $100 bonus as well. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly and offer resources to help you make appropriate choices. BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. 21 and up only to wager. All promotions are subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets. Bets expire in 30 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Massachusetts, Mississippi, and Nevada. Wrapping up hour one here, live on the Lombardi Line, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, continuing a little bit more of our college football conversation. Really appreciate Michael Calabrese stopping by of the Action Network, give his insight and a couple of specific bets he really likes. JVT, wanted to get a little bit more details on why you like UTEP so much in this bet against our guy Dustin.
First, for the content. I mean, why not, right? Put something big on a ridiculous game like Week Zero between UTEP and Jacksonville State. But I also think when you look at UTEP and what they bring back, Dimmel's got a pretty decent crew coming back. You know, there's a lot coming back on both ends of the ball. I think in the range of about 15, and they're part of, look, Conference USA is going to stink. So I think there's some upward mobility for some of these teams that are, you know, somewhat in the middle that you don't really know too much about. UTEP's win total is at 5.5. Played the thing over two. I just think I'm going to come in here, and I think I'm going to be somewhat pro UTEP as the season begins, and that starts here against Jacksonville State. It was more pro UTEP than anything else, and the market has moved in this direction. The initial opener here was Jacksonville State -1.5. We have now flipped that. It's been interesting. We had a group, it seemed like, released actually Jacksonville State to flip back to Jacksonville State for like 24 hours, then went right back to UTEP. So there is some resistance there and at least some support for the market for the minor. So I'm just pretty pro UTEP in this spot. I think with a lot of returning personnel, it's a team that could actually have some really positive upward momentum in a conference that really stinks, and that starts here in Week Zero.
Fair. I don't particularly have like a confident side in this game, but I'll be rooting for you to get that Andiamo dinner. I do like Michael's thoughts on the total potentially going over in this game, just because you feel like I referenced with him, the way that UTEP closed out the season last year offensively, returning 8 starters on that side of the ball, feels like they have a lot of reason to stay positive in that area offensively. And Jacksonville State, we know, yes, it was in at the FCS level previously a year ago, but 8-2-1 to the over that number a year ago with the way that their offense was clicking. So makes sense why that number is what it is, and I think that it can go over it. I also, in this Notre Dame-Navy game, I've gone back and forth on it. I feel like in my bones that Notre Dame's going to want Sam Hartman to gain confidence and challenge defenses and throw the ball downfield. And I don't have a ton of confidence in Navy with this new coaching staff right off the bat being able to gel, and those wide receivers and quarterbacks that aren't used to having to play in the pass game particularly very much, having to adjust to that. I feel like that could lead to some more turnover-worthy plays potentially for Navy. So I feel like Notre Dame can cover this number. I'm just not sure if I'm going to pull the trigger or not.
Yeah, I can understand that. I think Adam Burke made the number when I talked to him the other day, 24, somewhere in that range in favor of Notre Dame. So I think I can get behind that. What I find interesting here in this game is his total. So when we were talking with Calabrese and he mentioned that playing this under because of the new clock rules, I think that largely, you know, a lot of these have, you know, that kind of thought process has been baked into a lot of these numbers. And what's been interesting is the initial move here for the total was actually to the over. We saw this thing open up about 49.5. It went up to 50.5 and sat there for a minute. What I find interesting is now that Week Zero is here, the total has come back down to 49 and under that opening number of 49.5. So what I'd be interested here is how low does this get by the time we get to kickoff on Saturday morning? Because if it gets to a point where we're talking about like 48.5, 48, dare I say 47.5, I'm going to come back in and play this thing over. I thought it was worth looking at playing this over already at the opening number. Market moved in that direction. And now that we're going to start to get under that opening number, I'm kind of down with this because I got to think, Stormy, you know, I always say it, right? If you know it, they know it. We're not the only ones that know about these clock rules. And I think the market had factored that into the initial moves on some of these numbers. So I'm very interested to see what the market wants to do with a number like this in terms of the total.
I would monitor the weather in this game as well. There is expected to be rain, but not wind. And wind is what we know like usually impacts a game most when we're trying to bet under totals, right? Like there's not going to be wind in this game. And I think largely the rain is going to be overnight. So I would just monitor it and keep an eye on it.
I would say usually that is right. Precipitation doesn't really matter. It's the wind speed. But if we're right in thinking that these are two teams that would like to establish the run, if the field does get sloppy, as we have seen sometimes with overseas affairs, you know, if there is some rain, that doesn't leave much traction for run blocking, could really, you know, muck up these offenses if that's going to be the case. So just something to monitor.
Are there any other week zero games that you have bets on or are particularly interested in we move on?
So we talked about your guys a little bit. The market is starting to buy back here. So if we get 3.5 on Ohio, I'll be back in. Look, I think when you look at Curtis Rourke, I have questions as to, look, how effective you're going to be, right? We talk a lot about Cam Rising, but Curtis Rourke is another guy coming off an ACL injury and what the effect of this is going to be there. But having said that, thought they were the right side where this thing opened up 4.5. Got to as low as 2. Now we're starting to creep back up. So I would wonder very much, like DraftKings up the 3 right now, if that's going to be the case. If you give me 3.5, I'm in on Ohio. Haven't pulled the trigger yet. And also, now that we're getting closer, we're going to start to get some of these team totals up, because I really agree with this total move in USC and San Jose State. Get open 63.5 or 63. We're up to 66.5. You have two teams that are very good offensively. San Jose State's got 11 guys back on offense or thereabouts with Shaven Cordero. And, of course, USC has everything that they have. And San Jose State's not going to stop anybody. They only got 4 guys coming back from a bad defense. But USC's team total is something I thought was worth looking at. You know, you take out, when you look at like, hey, you know, we're going to lay 31 and hope that, you know, what's his face, Caleb Williams is going to stay in the entire game. But I have faith that San Jose State is not going to be able to really stop USC. And I think that USC is going to try to work out the kinks against these lesser opponents, thus run up the scores a bit. So I think that if you look at that, a team total option for USC might be the way to go there. And I agree with the market moving to the over.
Well, I did think maybe a backdoor cover could be a possibility if Caleb Williams doesn't play to close out the game. We do know Lincoln Riley is a coach that has no problem running it up. Yep. And he'll do what he needs to do to get his offense where it needs to be.
And we should note really quickly, team total for USC, by the way, 48.5. You guys mentioned something really important. I would very much not go into games, especially now that we're in college football, right? You see all these big point spreads. And a lot of people, I think, like to go, I'm going to bet that because there's a chance they could backdoor. The premise, though, that you're actually saying is, I don't think the team that I'm betting on is going to be covering by the time we get to the end of the game, right? Because you need to get in the back door. So it's very much better to go from a live betting standpoint, right, as opposed to betting, taking 31.5, whatever it is, and just being like, I hope they can get in the back. Because guess what? In that premise, you're not covering on like the final drive.
Correct. Which is why I liked that was the approach Michael mentioned right off the top when we discussed that game. Because while you look at that number and you think it's a possibility, you don't want to bet with that mindset, which is fair.
I know we have FIBA, but because college football.
We can get to it a little bit later, yeah.
But I would say this too. So something we started doing last year during the Live Bet Saturday shows, and I'm going to be back during the morning slates at 9 a.m. for the morning windows of college games. But one of my things that we started doing during the show last year was acting on opening drive touchdowns, because those are scripted drives. More often than not, you get scores. So using those to your advantage as a live bettor are really big. Underdog opening drive scores, coming back on the favorite. Low total opening drive, somebody scores, coming back in on an adjusted under. Things like that, but it's something very much I'd recommend. It's kind of like I equate it to, Stormy, the you know, the Yurfee and Nurfee of baseball, but in college football. Those opening drives are scripted. You're going to have a lot of success, and then you can go and bet off of those in-game because, again, remember, those drives are accounted for in the number that you see pre-flop, and there's ebbs and flows to a game, and it's very much worth it as a bettor to go in-game and try to play against those.
While we're on the advice standpoint, coming into week zero and week one of the college football season, we know there's so much turnover in this sport. There's so many teams. The transfer portal is wild these days. Even the way that coaches have flip-flopped programs year in and year out. Any just general advice you have for these opening specific weeks of college football?
Stick to what you know. I mean, that's what I do. You know, outside of having some opinions on certain teams, like looking at it and thinking that the market hasn't accounted for it. You know, some of the games that I'm interested in, right? USC, San Jose State, I cover the Mountain West on the side, have a pretty good knowledge of the conference. Ohio, San Diego State, again, same thing. So I would say very much it's not bad to stick with what you know, because if you stick with what you know, well, then guess what? It's a pretty good chance you could turn a profit because you actually know it. So, yeah.
Yeah, and it's probably a little bit late now when it comes to season win totals, but that's something that we talk about a lot in the offseason in general, is kind of finding those conferences that you can hone in on. We don't always have to be talking about the Georgias, Michigans, and Ohio States and Clemsons of the world. We can look at these Conference USAs or Mountain West conferences while they still exist in their current form and make decisions that way by honing in on something that maybe odds makers aren't as sharp on.
So Jacksonville State, UTEP matters is what you're saying.
I didn't say it didn't matter. But what I want our audience at home to know when we had Michael Calabrese on is that there were specific bets.
You're ostracizing fan bases around the country.
There were specific bets that he had in pocket that I wanted to get his opinion on his specific bets more so than a line move in another game. He's very knowledgeable and can talk about any game. That's great.
Our guy's bragging about watching film for UMass. All right, let's go. Let's talk about these games. Come on.
I have to watch UMass film. I'm covering that UMass-Auburn game week two.
Why do I get the feeling that technically week one. That football program actually still has literal film, like not digital stuff. Like they're just so behind the times, it's actual film stuff.
That would be
sorry, Steph. She's UMass.
Leave the Minutemen alone. Yes, she is. She is indeed.
A Minute Woman?